Of course, Jack Rice is our expert in international affairs as well as our intelligence agencies and legal matters, and he's joining us for the latter today as we talk about Donald Trump's Supreme Court pick to replace Justice Kennedy. Jack, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
No, it's great to be with you again. Thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure. This is Brett Kavanaugh is a bit of an interesting pick under the guise that it was not a name that was getting bandied about because people were thinking it was going to be one of these extreme far right. And I'm not saying this guy isn't far right, but it was one of those extreme far right names was getting put out there. He's just kind of far right light.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, what's also interesting about this, and people need to remember that there were a series of justices. All of these are on courts of appeals at this point. All four of those finalists were for the president, and all four of those were given the thumbs up by the Federalist Society. And the Federalist Society is essentially a very ultra-conservative, fundamentalist in some ways, organization. This isn't just Republican. This is not just conservative, but really in many ways ultra-conservative in terms of their approach. And for them to give a stamp of approval for somebody like a Brett Kavanaugh or even some of the others really says something about this. And that's really important. And specifically, one of the issues that the Federalist Society has talked about and really touted as one of their most fundamentally important issues is the question of Roe v. Wade. So that's really important, too.
How much do you know about Brett Kavanaugh?
A lot. He's actually he's a very, very smart guy. He used to clerk for Justice Kennedy. So that issue is important. But the other part about about this judge and what Judge Kavanaugh was this was somebody who actually worked with Ken Starr. He was part of the investigation, part of the process, and he was actually one of those who was really arguing for going after Bill Clinton. Remember, Prosecutor Starr was actually the one looking at Whitewater, ultimately looking at the Monica Lewinsky question. So he was involved in that. But what makes it interesting is subsequent to that, he was involved and working on a law review article where he actually changed his mind and said, and this is significant when it comes to this president, and his conclusion was that a sitting president shouldn't face any civil cases. In other words, you shouldn't be able to sue a sitting president for anything civil, even if it was something before his presidency, which is exactly what they were doing with Bill Clinton. But he took it a step further, and he actually said that you shouldn't be able to go after him for any criminal cases that were ongoing while he's president. And that obviously is what's going on with Bob Mueller right now. So as it applies to the president, you realize that conclusion is something that may have potentially had some significance with President Trump.
And it should be mentioned as well, that was an opinion that he put out for the Minnesota Law Review. And this actually, as people are saying, well, he's putting this out. No, he actually put that statement out, was it 2009, right when Obama came into power, which I think was something that initial analysis of Kavanaugh was that some conservatives felt as if him saying that at the beginning of the Obama administration negated his appeal for a Supreme Court spot. But clearly now Trump, I mean, and I'm honestly, that's the I read this whole background on this guy. That's the reason why Trump putting him on there is because he's looking for a friendly voice on there if it ever does get up to the Supreme Court on whether or not he should face charges.
Well, one of the things that we do know about Kavanaugh is makes him unique versus a lot of the other candidates who are out there, and really most anybody else who's sitting on the court right now, is he is a political's political. And he is very much an insider. He was born in Washington, D.C. He lived in Bethesda, which is just right on the border. It's where I used to live when I was working for the feds. That's a part of this issue. He was involved very deeply with the Bush administration, very much involved with the investigation itself. And this was really where he has been going from the very beginning. And he's on the Court of Appeals, the District Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. The idea that he's looking long term is something that does not shock me whatsoever. And so he's very conscious of that. Now, let's realize that anybody at this stage, anybody at this level, they're all politicals, and I'll include everybody on the left and on the right on that, because they have to realize that that is part of the process. To be actually make it to the Supreme Court or even to the Court of Appeals, you need to be cognizant that they're going to put you under a microscope. So they're going to be very, very, very careful in this case.
A report came out, I believe it was NBC News put out a report that this actually might have been in the works for a while, that Kennedy approached Trump and said, I might be willing to retire, but I want you to consider a handful of people I think are worthy of my seat. Kavanaugh was one of them. Now, what I find to be interesting, first of all, the White House did not deny this today. They were asked point blank if there were discussions about this with Kennedy prior to his retirement, and he refused to answer that question. But the other thing is that Kennedy is an interesting duck himself. He's a conservative, but he's an old school Reagan conservative, in the sense being that occasionally he does find the left side of social issues, such as gay marriage or and when it comes down to, abortion rights and stuff like that. And I'm wondering, do you feel as if that, he understood his position, that seat he had on the Supreme Court, and so he was trying to push someone that had similar mindsets? I know that a lot of people point to Kavanaugh being against Roe v. Wade, but I mean, I find it interesting Kennedy would then push him so hard to be the replacement.
Well, and it's very difficult to determine exactly where he's going to go on that issue, and we know that he's going to be extremely cagey on it. But what I can tell you is this, and this is the one thing about Justice Kennedy, is people have been holding him up as the moderate, as that swing vote. But what that really highlights is one point that I think is missed a lot, and that's that there has been a massive shift within the court itself. Let's be clear. Justice Kennedy was a conservative.
Yes.
He was not a moderate. He wasn't leftist in any sense of the word. What we have seen is a particular dive to the right, and the idea that he was the fifth member, that he was the moderate, really says an incredible amount about where the court is going right now. You need to think about the likes of a Thomas and a Roberts and a Scalia and what that actually means. These are, dare I say this, really very extreme when it comes to the right in terms of their interpretation. And the idea that Kennedy was right there says something about it. Now, as to this other question of whether or not he was involved, it's a really interesting question, because in many ways, there is that human nature piece of this that says that I look back at my life, I look back at what I've done. Do I want to perpetuate that? Would I like somebody to take my seat who has that same mindset? That's interesting. It will be very interesting to see if more comes out about this. There are a lot of issues that are out there that need to be addressed. It does seem likely to me that you're going to get a confirmation of the likes of a Kavanaugh, simply because there's been a change in the rules in the Senate and in the Senate Judiciary Committee, because there was a time when you needed more than 51. Now you need only 51. And in this case, the Republicans have all the numbers they need, so long as they can get everybody in their party to agree. What's unfortunate about that, however, is that I think the benefit of having a supermajority, the idea of having 60 or more to actually all agree, really required both parties to find a way to work together. And sadly, changing the rules as they have, as the Republicans did, is that what this does is it creates even a larger schism in society, where the Republicans can essentially say, look, we only have to get our own. We essentially are here to represent the Republicans, not the American people. And you're excluding half of society who will now look at this issue and simply say, they don't care what we think. And in many ways, the Republicans themselves could say the same thing and say, we don't care what you think because we don't need you. And that's a real problem in the country right now.
Well, and I just can't wait for McConnell and the rest of these clowns when the Democrats do take over the Senate, which eventually will happen again. And there's a Supreme Court nominee, and they basically do it without the filibuster, screaming about how what a grand injustice this is. You can't. I mean, the whole argument they've had, and I mean, what's interesting is they're trying to, McConnell and Orrin Hatch, they're out there trying to make the argument, well, the no filibuster rule is only for Supreme Court justices. But people were saying, you start down this road, it's eventually going to get rid of the filibuster completely and get to the world which you just described, where everything is just what our party wants over uber alles. And that is, it is kind of a scary principle, but it's going to be hilarious when the Republicans argue about how dare you not give us the right to stop this.
No, you're saying this really from the top down. I mean, that would be my largest criticism of this president in many ways, is that he has seen the desire to sort of divide and conquer, and he sees as the us versus them and the them being the entire Democratic Party, calling them every word that you want to call them, when in fact what we've generally seen from most every president prior to this as somebody who said, I'm the president of all of the people, not just of a particular few. And the problem that you have is when you have that philosophical bent and it runs all the way down from there, you have the potential and the argument and the justification that could simply be, guess what, majority rules. The problem is that the Constitution was designed to do more than simply represent the majority. It was designed to protect the minority in this case. And that is one of the concerns that I think we have to see right now. What will be interesting, though, Matt, is that when we look at timing, the thing about Kavanaugh is that Kavanaugh has been on the bench for more than a decade. And so he has a lot of opinions, which means there's going to be a lot of paper when it comes to that. But he also has a lot of time when he was working in the Bush White House, and then before that, working for Ken Starr. And so there's a lot of documentation that has to be acquired and put before all of those members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And the idea is they need to jam this confirmation through by October, because it has to be done before the midterms. Because from the Republicans' perspective, if the worst of all world happens and that the Dems were able to take back the Senate, they could actually stop this confirmation. And that's one of the issues Republicans are looking at. So at absolute latest, they're going to get this guy before the Senate Judiciary Committee sometime in October.
Jack Rice, once again, jackrice.net, joining us right, for all your Jack Rice news. Jack, the Roe v. Wade is obviously the big decision they're wondering about, but let's I'm not sure how, if you're aware, what you know about this, but the Supreme Court can't just all of a sudden say, we're going to re-rule on Roe v. Wade. They have to wait for a case to get up to them, which is not a quick process. Is there a case in the hopper right now that's coming up that actually puts Roe v. Wade on the potential chopping block, or would they have to start from square one today to get a case up there with potentially Kavanaugh on the bench?
Well, you got to realize that's part of what the Federalist Society is about. Is that any time you look at cases that would essentially go before the Supremes, the purpose is to literally cherry-pick, to get the case that has that issue in a very narrow parameters so you can make the argument that you want to make. And so they will be watching cases that are nationwide, and these are cases that would already have gone up potentially through state courts or into the federal court system before they get to the Supremes, with the very intent of putting it before the court on this issue. Now, my expectation, and this is how I see this playing out, and this is really the argument that the Federalists themselves have been trying to argue from the beginning, is the reason that Roe v. Wade is bad law, the reason it doesn't work and it doesn't hold up, and this is their argument generally, is that it's not a constitutionally protected right, and that what it really should be is a right that actually is given to the states to make the determination. So they're going to try to hide behind the argument that we're not trying to say that we should ban and outlaw abortion. That's a question for each individual state to be arguing. But what they're going to try to do is to negate the logic behind concluding that there was a federal protection and a federal right to an abortion. And that way it rolls back to the states for the states to decide. Because what the states will do, and there's a whole bunch of them, we can go into Texas and Florida and Georgia and Alabama and a whole series of others, who have basically made the argument that we're going to limit and narrow and cut all the various things that are going on to make abortions essentially illegal and impossible. They have tried to do this in Texas. There are cases going on in Texas right now that may actually fall within these parameters that they're going to drop before the court. And if they can get five judges, they get five justices, that's all they need to say this is actually wrong, because they have overturned their own precedent in the past saying we made a mistake. They just did it in the last couple of weeks with Karamatsu. And that's the case with the Japanese internment, and it was driven by one of my favorite justices of all time, and that's Sotomayor, who actually came in and said what's going on in a particular case is similar to that, and they had to overturn that one. So the idea that the court could come in and say we have made bad decisions in the past and we're going to overturn it, they may have the justices to do it. And that's exactly what the Federalists have wanted. And that's actually what President Trump specifically said he was going to do. I'm going to put justices on the bench that are going to overturn Roe v. Wade. That's what he said. And frankly, now that he has Gorsuch, and now potentially that he has Kavanaugh, you add Thomas to that, you add Alito to that, and realistically, you're good to go.
And by the way, that would open up an insane can of worms on multiple levels if you ended up having states like Texas prosecuting their own citizens for going to a state like Minnesota where abortion would be illegal, and getting an abortion would then they prosecute that person upon return, or what it would do for cases like legal marijuana in some states, because it kind of underrides the Department of Justice's argument that you can't have individual states' rights on this. It really does seem to be they're dancing on a fine line on this.
Well, you take a look at the argument there. I mean, that's always been the question here. That's really the debate about this idea of the originalist, the idea of making the argument that we're trying to interpret the Constitution as it was written. Mm-hmm. And the problem that comes with that is that means that you would have to limit the parameters of it to what it was that the original founders were thinking about when they drafted that Constitution. But the problem is many of the arguments made by those same originalists essentially that very issue. They're trying to claim that we're not outcome-based, we're process-based. But the problem that comes with that argument is if you look at those that they support, including the Kavanaugh, they're looking at his outcomes to decide that they're going to support him. So that simply undercuts their very argument.
Fascinating stuff. And then, of course, we have Thomas and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who are both quite getting up there in age, and it's going to be interesting to see, because regardless of all this stuff with Kavanaugh, this is the one thing you can say to the Democrats, well, Thomas is really the next big linchpin, and Ginsburg. And if Ginsburg can make it to the next presidency, which hopefully will be a Democrat, then you got to ask about Thomas. How long is he going to stay on the bench? Because if Thomas resigns, then basically it's lobbing back into the liberals' court, where they could put a fifth judge on there who could be a true liberal for a long time and end up holding the cart for the left.
Well, you can always consider it this way, too, that if the Republicans can continue to control the Senate, you may have a Thomas who turns around and says, you know what? I'm going to get out now. I'm going to get out in this window of time to make sure that a Republican can actually put somebody in my position. And in fact, you can remember there were actually Democrats who were making the very same argument about saying that RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, should have resigned under President Obama, because at least then there would have been some control in terms of replacing her. But again, of the two justices on the bench right now who are really fighting the fight on the left, that would be Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You look at the dissent that came down in a recent case and some of the work that they're doing, it may be some of the best of their entire career, if that's your ilk. On the other hand, you may consider them the most evil on the bench, if that's your ilk. I'll leave that to various people.
One quick final question. You brought up Thomas. So say the Democrats do win the Senate. Would there be enough time between the election and the new Senate being seated for them to be able to have him resign and basically put another justice on the bench? I mean, obviously McConnell would push it through, but would there be enough time to do it?
I think that would be very, very hard to do in that window of time when you consider how fast that would be. My gosh, because that would be November 2nd. No, I don't think you can do it in less than 60 days.
All right.
I don't think you could do it that fast.
All right. Well, and right now they're going to hold off until Kennedy's seat's filled. So Jack Rice, once again, jackrice.net. Jack, brilliant as always, and we'll spotlight this interview. Thanks, Jack. I appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend.
Take care. Jack Rice, a great visit with him. Wow. Good information there. We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. And once again, Julie Sandstead, 6A representative. She's running for re-election up in the Northland. We'll talk to her in a little bit as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
I can't disguise the pounding of my heart. It beats so strong.